same-sex mentors have a particular impact that male mentors don't for girls and women in fields where the percentage of women is really small.
On the fourth Thursday of each April, more than 37 million Americans at over 3.5 million workplaces participate in Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day. For over a quarter century, this public education program has been in place to encourage girls and boys to dream without gender limitations and to think imaginatively about future employment and their community lives. The success of Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day relies on a mentor-mentee structure, with guardians in the role of mentors helping connect what children learn at school with the actual working world. In this episode of Pep Talks, we will be discussing research on the value of mentors, in particular for girls and young women in STEM fields, as the world seeks to plug the leaky STEM pipeline from its shortage of women. Hi, I'm Natalie Demers, the Director of Research Initiatives and Programs for the National Coalition of Girls' Schools. Positive role models are essential for girls to grow into confident women. Research shows that not only do female students need mentors, they particularly need female mentors who can model greater diversity in women's lives today. Joining me is Dr. Buju Dasgupta, a researcher and professor of psychology at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Dr. Dasgupta has dedicated her over 20-year career to studying how stereotypes constrain disadvantaged groups, such as women, in academic and professional domains. Much of her research investigates the question, does changing the setting in which individuals are immersed make them resilient to stereotypes? For example, women learning in all-female educational environments versus co-ed settings. Recently, she has been working on a 5-year National Science Foundation-funded study looking at the influence of peers on 8th-grade students' academic interest and aspirations in STEM. I'll be talking with Dr. Dasgupta about her body of research. Dr. Dasgupta, thank you for joining me today.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Across the world, data shows no difference between girls and boys in their math and science abilities, but there are significant gender differences in educational pathways. To what do you attribute this disconnect for young women between ability in STEM-related subjects versus interest in pursuing STEM-related studies?
I think a big factor that determines that divide between performance and ability has to do with stereotypes. Essentially, societal expectations of what girls and women are supposed to be good at and what boys and men are supposed to be good at. And those societal expectations influence two things. One, they influence how other people, so peers, teachers, parents, treat girls and women and what they're expected to do well. But those stereotypes also get internalized and influence what girls feel they're good at, where girls feel confident, where girls feel they belong, and where they don't. So stereotypes influence how others perceive girls, but they also influence how girls perceive themselves.
You have developed what you call a stereotype inoculation model to address the gender disparity in the pursuit of science and math intensive fields. How does this work?
I think of the stereotype inoculation model like a vaccine. So just as a biomedical vaccine protects and inoculates our physical body against noxious bacteria, exposure to scientists and engineers who are women or peers who are women protects and inoculates young girls from noxious stereotypes. So in that way, I think that seeing scientists and engineers who are women, seeing peers who are in STEM, who are girls and women, act as social vaccines for young girls in STEM and also young women in STEM. So when girls are in learning environments, in the classroom, out there in a science museum, or anywhere in the world, if they see other girls and women who are really excited about science and engineering and tech, that's when they're much more likely to imagine themselves be like those people in the future. But if they don't see any other women around them and all the scientists, engineers, and technologists are men, they sort of get the message very quickly that this is a place where the successful people, the superstars, are likely to be boys and men. So I think that's one important piece of the stereotype inoculation model. So the second piece in the stereotype inoculation that matters a lot is whether girls subjectively identify or connect with those experts or role models. So someone can be a role model only to the extent that those young girls see themselves in those role models. So the more someone sees a role model as being like them or someone they want to be like, the more impactful that person is likely to be. And third, we found that these kinds of exposure to social vaccines, so scientists and engineers who are women and same-sex peers, are particularly impactful when students are at transition periods. So the transition from middle school to high school, the transition from high school to college, these are the periods where students feel most sort of unmoored or uncertain of their place and whether they're likely to be successful. And seeing someone like them during that transition period essentially acts as a social vaccine in a particularly powerful way.
Much of your research has focused on the value of mentors, especially for young women. What have you learned?
One of the things we've learned is that someone can be an excellent mentor and be admired and respected for being a great mentor. But there's a special power for girls and women in STEM to have a mentor of the same sex. And that is because when you are worried about whether you belong in a place or whether you're good enough, having a mentor who's just a few years more senior than you, who is of the same sex, makes that connection and makes the sense of belonging be more powerful. So the first and biggest lesson we found is same-sex mentors have a particular impact that male mentors don't for girls and women in fields where the percentage of women is really small, like engineering, like physics, like computer science, for example. The second thing we found is that having that same-sex mentor has a profound effect in increasing and protecting women's feelings of belonging in that field where there are very few people like them, and their feelings of confidence that they can do that. And that belonging and confidence, we find, are the two critical ingredients that determine persistence, that determine ambition, and that determine actually pursuit of those STEM careers. And three, we found that having those same-sex mentors, again, in that transition period, that's really the sweet spot where mentoring has most bang for the buck, where students come into that environment, it's a new environment for them, they feel uncertain about their place, and they're trying to determine, am I good enough to be here? Or should I switch into another field? And it's in those moments, if they have a mentor who is a senior when they are a first-year student, or a mentor who's a high school student, who's a senior in high school, when they are an entering ninth grade student, those are the moments where that same-sex mentor is particularly impactful.
Research has shown that girls thrive in collaborative learning environments. What role does the gender composition of learning groups play in the success and pursuit of STEM fields?
One might think that teams where there's one person of every kind, one woman, is the ideal kind of group. But actually, my research and that of several other people shows that the experience of being a solo, of being the only one in a team, can really impede learning and participation. So in our research, we found that teams of engineering students, for example, it could be any other STEM subject, where there's only one woman, that woman ended up being really quiet and participating less. She also felt more anxious and worried about being part of this team. And after participating in the team, she was much less likely to want to pursue a career in STEM. On the positive side, we found that when teams had at least 50% women, those were the teams where women flourished the most. They spoke up, they felt less anxious, they felt more motivated. When they came out of the team project on the other side, they were particularly invested in pursuing a career in STEM. So the main takeaway is that collaboration and collaborative teams are great, but pay attention to the gender composition of those teams and avoid putting students in teams where they are the only person of a kind.
Your team has been gathering data for the past 5 years related to the influence of peers on eighth grade students' academic interest and aspirations in STEM. Any preliminary findings you can share?
I think there are three biggest takeaways so far. One has to do with the pedagogy, so how teachers teach science and math. And what we are finding is that teachers who emphasize the social relevance of the subject, why it matters out there in the world, if girls pick up that social relevance and they understand why they're studying science, how it helps solve important problems, and how it helps people like me, that's when girls are particularly interested in STEM. The second important takeaway has to do with seeing other students of your own gender in the classroom. We find that when kids see other kids who are doing well in science and math class, who are of the same gender as they, that's when they feel most inspired. And that's what increases their feelings of confidence in their own ability and their feeling of belonging, and has these positive downstream effects on how much they like the subject, how well they do in the class, how much they speak up in class, what they want to be when they grow up. And finally, I'll say that for girls in particular, collaborative teams, collaborative learning seems to matter a lot. So more than boys, in our data, we found that girls who work in teams in science and math seem to show the biggest benefits, whereas for boys, working alone versus working in teams doesn't make a difference. The last thing I leave you with in terms of our preliminary findings, we find that both the pedagogical style and the presence of same gender peers and also collaborative learning has benefits by impacting students' confidence. The more students experience these kinds of classrooms, the more confident they feel about their own ability in STEM, which in turn has these ripple effects by the end of eighth grade and entering the ninth grade.
As we wrap up, what are some research-based best practices that you can share with educators to encourage gender diversity and inclusion in STEM?
I have a few best practices that I want to highlight. Our data suggests that when students are in classes that are co-ed, seeing other scientists and engineers and experts in general who are women matters a lot. Absent seeing women, students often assume that people who are great in science and math, who grow up to be a technologist or a scientist or an engineer, are mostly men. So seeing a woman teaching the class or being the professional role model or being the guest speaker in class makes a huge difference in allowing girls and women to imagine themselves in those careers in the future. The second is that when teachers and professors teach, I would encourage them to use examples of discoveries by women scientists and engineers and talk about their research, talk about their discovery, but also very casually show the person, the image of the person, the name of the person. And again, that's another way of showing that the people who are making these discoveries, who are the innovators, are women. Again, absent mentioning very explicitly the identity of the scientists or engineers or the technologists, students often assume the default. And the default is that this person has to be a man. So I think showcasing the discoveries and innovations of women scientists and engineers, I think, is also best practice. The third takeaway or best practice has to do with the gender composition of teams, which is something I mentioned earlier, that when teachers and professors are teaching their classes and the class involves teamwork, which often science and engineering classes do, make sure that there is gender parity in teams of students working together. The fourth one has to do with ensuring that the content of the class includes the social relevance of the material. So why are students studying about science? Why are they studying about math? What does it have to do with the lived experience in the social world? How does it help people? So including examples of how science and math and engineering helps people out there in the world is another way of keeping students engaged. One other best practice has to do with having students be paired with same-sex peer mentors, because those same-sex peer mentors, especially early in high school or early in college or early in middle school even, can have a profound effect in ensuring that students feel confident, feel that they belong, and feel that they can become master the material and become successful in that field. And finally, in all our research, we found that interventions, remedies are particularly impactful if they are introduced in those transition points as students transition from one phase of their life to another. So from the transition from middle to high school, the transition from high school to college, or even the transition from college to the workforce.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure speaking with you. To learn more about girls' schools, visit ncgs.org or follow NCGS on Twitter at Girls Schools. Pep Talks is a project of the National Coalition of Girls' Schools, the leading advocate for pre-K through 12th grade girls' schools. With more than 250 member schools across North America and beyond, NCGS is dedicated to educating and empowering girls to lead lives of commitment, confidence, contribution, and fulfillment. Pep Talks is produced by Olivia Haas and Jen Shakeshaft and edited by Stacey Tippins, with special thanks to the Madeira School in McLean, Virginia.